so when the sand's veil falls, we will not be here. We will be at the walls of Heliopolis. We will land whatever transports remain en masse, and then assault the city when the storm dies. He looks around. I will need a commander to lead a cohort to destroy the storm god, while the rest of us push south with the Titans. His eyes settle on me, and I feel the urgency behind them. Hostility has been replaced by desperate faith. Here is the chance to prove myself to Ajax and Atalantia. Lysander, will you and your Praetorians do this for me? For our family? Kalindora shakes her head at me. It would be our honour, I say. I will go with him, Seraphina mutters. This isn't my first storm crossing. Garja might get lost. Two children leading the Praetorians, Kalindora laughs. Have all the jumped-up arrogance. I'll lead the party.
No, I will need you here, Kalindora, Ajax says.
The storm god will have a garrison, she says. My oath to Octavia still stands. I will defend the air with my life. And I'm going to kill a storm engine, Ajax. Got a problem with that?
Chapter 13. Darrow. Plains of Caduceus. The door of my trap slams closed. The storm is here. Day has become night. Black thunderheads race off the sea to blind their armada. Lightning shatters the sky, disrupting communications between their landing parties, drones, and orbit support. Winds swirl and clash from multiple storm eyes. They toss rip wings and landing craft like toys. Their first wave is trapped beneath the storm. Their second is murdered within it. Their third dare not descend. Orion has given me my lever. I'm putting my full weight on it. 5,000 Drakenjägers pound for Tyche with half again as many star shells riding upon their backs. More survivors found us, swelling our ranks. We cut through the feigned flower latifundia of Mercury, our titanium feet stomping orderly rows of sun blossoms. The flower pollen paints the clawed metal feet gold. From my perch on Rona's Meg, I spot ships struggling in the high winds. My columns hurdle the highway in a single bound and split up to form into wedges. This is not their first shockwave. The enemy lies ahead. An entire division, four legions, has made landfall between Tyche and the plains of Caduceus. In the gloom, thousands of ships bearing the golden hammers of Votum unload men and war machines onto rolling fields of lavender. They intended to mop up whatever remains of my legions, but their landing has been thrown into chaos by the storm. The customary gold landfall fortifications aren't complete. Tank wedges are only half-formed. War machines barely unloaded. Infantry sheltering from the wind behind grounded transports. They don't expect us yet, and they don't see us coming. We fall upon them with malice. A golden star shell with officer markings stands with his officers around a communications array in the shelter of a hill. One of his men points. He turns, just as lightning flashes, illuminating our tide of onrushing metal. Rona bounds forward and lands 40 meters of war machine on the officers. I watch on her shoulder as the star shells crumple. The first column of Drakenjägers fires four Alpha Omegas. The nukes detonate in the center and opposite flank of their landfall, just above their two groups of Titans. Daylight. The heaviest armor, which would more than match ours, vaporizes. A rolling tide of devastation. The Draken wedges fire their particle cannons in tiers, targeting heavy armor. 5 minutes before each can fire again, it makes no matter. Bedlam follows as the wedges hew through the enemy along a 4 kilometer front, like 100 spears into paper. The quad railguns fire into the confused mass of enemy. Infantry simply disappears. Grav bikes are cut in half, Transports peel away, only to clash against one another as the wind disrupts their flight paths. The Drakenjägers pull on their iron swords. 5,000 blue-white cleavers go to work. When the carnage itself slows the charge's momentum, and we flounder under the debris from the nukes, the star shells release. Alexander and I spin sideways together. I rip off the door of an infantry transport. 100 greys in war gear stare at me in green light. Alexander opens fire with his railgun. Thunder booms overhead. Felix has fallen to a group of greys with uranium rifles. We send them scattering and haul him to his feet. Another second and he'd be dead. The golds are rallying to their legion standard. The standard rises from the spine of a giant blue titan. The titan is 60 meters tall, four legs and three main cannons, with disc-shaped alien cockpit. The standard is 5 meters tall and made of three emblems, the god Helios, a society pyramid, and a giant pair of golden hammers. A votum is with us. Please let it be Scorpio himself. Two Drakenjägers plunge toward the standard. As the Titan arrests their charge with its gravity gun, golds in starshell swarm over the Drakenjägers like a pack of velociraptors taking down a Tyrannosaurus. They jump onto the rightmost's back and hew through the spine armor to cut the power lines connecting the stomach generator to the cockpit. The Titan's third arm pulls the top half off the cockpit. A gold in a starshell reaches in and pulls the orange pilot in half with his armored hands and throws her body into the wind. Gods, can they kill? And I thank the Vale that it is the Arcosian Knights with me. Not a red I know could survive this outside a Drakenjäger. I search for Rona, but can't find her rig in the fray. I gather Alexander and 100 of his kin, and we drive toward the rallying goals from the flank. Rona appears to the left, and her wedge draws their attention. By the time they see us coming to their right, we're amongst them, firing point-blank and drenching our blades. With Alexander, I mount the 60-meter crest of the Titan and kill the two golds defending the height. Alexander carves the pilot out and holds him in the air. The gold man wears an incredible suit of armor that appears nearly translucent. He slashes at Alexander with his razor. Alexander bats the lightning-fast blade away and pins it in his starshell's hand. With his other hand, he squeezes the pulse helm of the gold until it shears off. That's quality there.
The Primus himself! Alexander shouts above the wind. Hiding in a Titan! What a pixie!
The veins in the forehead of the old tyrant pulse as he glares up, at the mercy of a man a quarter his age.
Blood traitor! He snarls.
Then he sees my curved blade. Scorpio, au votum! I warble out my speakers. Through the rain and spattered blood on my canopy, his vain eyes meet mine, and I drink in his fear. Blood leaks down his face. For 101 years of rape, genocide, and enslavement of your fellow man, I sentence you to the mud. There, atop his Titan, I cut him in half at the waist, and Alexander hurls him off the height. The blood of the conquerors thins, Alexander drawls through the comms. He cuts the standard off the Titan and hands it to me. One more for your collection, Goodman. I shove it back into his hands. Build your own. With a grin, he holds it up against the crackling sky and leaps off to land on Rona, who trudges to pick us up. He stabs it down into the thick shoulders of her Drakenjäger, sharing the bounty.
To Tyke!
I bellow. My men pick up the call, and we push through the shattered remains of the division to leave it thrashing in the mud. More landfalls lie ahead. More enemy to kill. More, more, more. A laughing zeal fills me. By the time we leave the flower fields, 2 hours later, only 500 drakens have fallen. and the standards of 15 legions decorate the shoulders of my rolling columns. Alexander has taken 4 with his own hand. I trail with 3. His second cousin, Ilander, has 2, along with the captain of the Drakenjägers, and Rona herself. We scalp the cores and battery shards from the dead for our own starshells, rearm when the winds abate, and push for the coastal highlands where Tyche and Atalantia await. I'm coming, Atalantia. I'm coming for your head.
Chapter 14. Lysander. Into the storm. 1,000 Praetorians, the Love Knight, and the daughter of Romulus, follow me west to seek the eye of the desert storm. It makes us 1,003 worlds of misery. Serafina and Kalindora flank me, each man, each woman, alone in the darkness of their suits, imprisoned by the wind and sand. Left foot, right foot, left foot. Courtesy of Serafina's storm experience, we employ a rim trick. Towing wire holds us together like grapes, so we do not lose one another in the storm. Periodically, Serafina and Praetorians with storm experience detach to scout our perimeter. Still, our progress is slower than desired. Storm winds hit us head-on and increase to over 800 kilometers per hour with visibility of scarcely 2 meters. The storm robs us of the sky and our instruments. Bit by bit, trespassing against the wind drains our starshells. After 8 hours of this, only the transition of the storm's dimness to absolute darkness denotes the arrival of night. When the wind lulls, we jog, tripling our pace by using the thrusters in small bursts. Several lines snap because of this, and we lose Praetorians in the storm. There is no going back for them or for us. The fear that gripped me in the tube of the Anihilo is gone. The sensation of standing on the edge of the cliff was worse than the fall. Life has winnowed down to a simple task and survival. That simplicity is a comfort. For years I was in a torpor and cowardly in indecision. Here I have certainty. I will prove myself to Ajax, to Atalantia. I am their family, not their rival. Forward, left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot. Something is out there, Serafina says. I peer into the darkness and see nothing. Still, Kalindora gives the order to hunker down. We prime our weapons. Holy hells! Contact! There's a chorus of hold fire calls from the scouts. Dread shapes move in the murk. Only when they come within 5 meters and they engage their lights can we see they are starshells. 10 of them. Our headlamps illuminate votum hammer sigils painted on the chassis. Might be hundreds behind them for all we can see. One steps out before the others. My comm crackles, and a handsome sun-dark face illuminated by starshell interior lights glows in my HUD.
Ever the evening, good men. And we thought we were the only civil company for 1,000 clicks. Is that not Kalindora herself I gaze upon?
Cicero, you scoundrel! You're supposed to be in the plains of Caduceus.
Squeaks the mouse to the rat, he says with light menace. Mayhaps love is lost in the storm, my friends. Didn't you know Heliopolis is just a skip to the south?
A beat of silence. I go where I am ordered.
Like a good knight. The peril of oaths, no?
But fear not, my intrepid father noticed a certain lack of leopards on his flank in the plains of Caduceus, and has sent us to ensure that no skullduggery is afoot at the gates of Heliopolis.
His voice lowers.
The city belongs to my father, Scorpio, and House Votum. We are weary of grimace henchmen skulking in the dark.
Prepare to fire, Kalindora says, over the private channel.
I have them flanked, Serafina intones. I count 400. Could be more.
Belay that, I snap, No Praetorian will fire on allies, nor will you, Seraphina.
Yes, Dominus,
Rome says, and gives the order for all Praetorians to stand down. Kalindora goes into a stony silence.
Private communications, eh, Kalindora? I don't need to crack your code to know what you said, Cicero says. Not enough that that loony's bitch tries to steal our city. She'll spill old blood like there's so much of it left.
Salve, Cicero, I say, taking over from Kalindora.
And who's that? He asks.
I share my face via hologram. I knew Cicero as a child. Not well, but on the occasions when his family visited Luna, grandmother insisted I entertain the voluble heir of House Votum. To be honest, I found it tiresome, if not a little entertaining. He is 10 years older, and thus his condescension is limitless and hilarious, yet unlike Ajax he recognizes me immediately.
Hades on high, he says, without an ounce of surprise. Is that Lysander our loon in the pinkish flesh?
So his father told him. You never do forget a face, Cicero.
Not the pretty ones, at least. Father didn't lie. Not dead after all, my, my. Atalantia has roped you into her schemes. How the beast now leads the master.
We are en route to destroy the storm god, I say.
There aren't any storm gods on our planet.
There are. Explanations can wait. You want your city back. I won't stop you, but you won't get there if those engines are still running. I imagine your cores are as depleted as ours. He does not reply. We have a pickup scheduled. That gets his attention. What say you lend us a hand, and we ride for Heliopolis together in the morning? He laughs, as if he were on a beach.
For such a dramatic union, I'll play earnest. So long as you support our claim to Heliopolis when we find Ajax, that mischievous little tart.
Kalindora reminds me that it would put me in direct conflict with Atalantia. But she's already done that by summoning the Praetorians. Heliopolis was built by House Votum. With House Votum it should remain, I say.
Splendid. Then the Scorpion Legion is at your service, my good man. Or is it my liege? I suppose Father will decide, if he survives the North. Calamity, good man.
His mind darkens.
Calamity.
I cannot divine the strength of the Scorpion Legion, as they add their numbers to ours. Though Cicero continues to babble in my ear, I'm soon lost in the now familiar grind. Left, right, left. I'm deep in the drudgery when a hand grips my armored shoulder. I blink out of my daze to see that it is 3 in the morning. Landfall +17. I look back to see the Praetorians arrayed 50 deep to my right. The Scorpions emerge from the dust to my left. They must be several thousand in number. At dire cost to our energy cause, we have made it to the eye of the storm. I hadn't even realized. It is a different world. The eye is 50 kilometers in diameter, the air pacific and clear of sand, as if held in static twilight. A desert dealing watches us with suspicion. A formless beast lurks beneath the mass of a hoodoo, its eyes winking like coins. More beasts of all varieties float within the gravity shadow of the engines. They didn't even bother to diffuse the gravity shadow. All this is surrounded by a vortex of sand, which swirls around a monolith of grey metal. The storm god floats kilometers above the desert. Wreathing its shoulders and stretching toward the heavens is a swirling marble cloak of clouds veined with lightning. Beneath that, little more than a fringe to that cloak, is the swirling sand. Many of the animals who sought shelter here gather in the grip of its gravity engines. It breaks something inside me to see an instrument of creation perverted into a weapon. Whatever doubt I held vanishes. Darrow is no longer a good man. even Atalantia declined to use her atomics on actual cities. But to kill us, Darrow will drown the northern coast of Helios. Tyche, Kaikos, Priapos, Erebos will all be in the path of tidal waves. Millions will die. I do not know if it can be stopped, but he must be.
This feels like a dream, Seraphina whispers.
This war is proving to be all she ever wanted. Cicero eyes the woman with interest and calls something to her. I can barely hear him for the wind. Our instruments are dazzled with false readings. I fear we will not be able to reach Ajax even in the morning, which is why he is scheduled to come with pickup at 0600, if we manage to down the engine. I find Kalindora at my side. Unlike Seraphina, she is not in thrall to the storm god. Sorrow fills her eyes as she looks up and up. She has seen horror many times before. This is merely its bleakest evolution. Your thermal runway, I say. She turns with a grim expression and pulls Roan to her.
Prepare to engage in 6 columns, double heavy fronts. Prep 3 wedges for a flank charge.
She summons Cicero. Robbed of our orbital support, we will have to do this the old-fashioned way. I check my ammunition just as there's a flash from the storm god. Cicero ducks with me. At the great distance, I cannot distinguish what it is. Before I can pull up my optics, Seraphina tilts her head back to me.
Gasha, don't be such a...
And then, the entire top half of her starshell disappears, as a rail slug the size of a man rips Romulus's daughter clean in half. My commands stick in the base of my throat as the legs of the mech teeter and collapse sideways, spilling her intestines out the top.
Incoming!
Kalindora bellows.
Chapter 15. Darrow. Tyche. There is no place in all worlds like Tyche. Set on an incline between the mountains and the sea, on a great strip of lowland connecting it to the Talarian Peninsula, it is the ancestral home of the Gens Votum. Though the city is famed for its white sands and coral reefs, there is a reason the Votum family crest is a hammer. They are builders, and they built this city not for greed, but for beauty and symmetry. Her old quarter is carved entirely of local stone and glass. Libraries, the size of starships but shaped like bizarre human heads, line the mountains behind the city. High arching bridges link complex systems of archipelagos, some of which migrate into the northern sea in the late summer. Forests and gardens burst from rooftops, and flowering plants creep down the narrow cobbled streets, which then wind in spirals up her 12 great hills. I remember the Liberation Day, nearly half a decade ago now, when I woke in the early morning before the parade and walked alone down to the shore to listen to the gulls. I only wish my wife and son could have been with me to see that sunrise. For once, I did not glare at the sea and wonder how many of my men it claimed. I did not resent the world because it was made by slaves. I saw only a multitude of splendors. I think that's what Severo called it. On that day, Tyche was the second most beautiful city I had ever seen. I wanted to share it with Pax and Virginia. Now I am in time to see the city die. As we pushed through the reeling legions, the storm mutated from friend to wild, convulsing savage. Lunging in from the sea, giant waves crash over the north coast of Helios. As we neared Tyche, a wall of water, nearly 0.5 kilometer high, forced us to run to higher ground, lest it smash us, as it does the gold landing parties on the shore. Boats float in the center of fields. A shark snaps for air in a tree. Our starshells can no longer attempt the sky. Trees rocks, and signposts flung at hundreds of kilometers an hour damage our suits, killing two of my precious obsidian pathfinders. This is not the storm I was promised. Orion has either disobeyed me or lost control. Now, with dread in my belly, I rise unsteadily through the howling wind to the crest of a hill where the Arcosian knights look down at a city drowning. From Tyche's southern wharf to the northern business district, a third of the city is underwater. The storm surge from the Hypercane spreads east and shows no sign of stopping short of the mountains. Within hours, the entire city will be gone, with only the tallest towers peaking above the sea. The western reach of the city, where the lowlands connect with the Talarian Peninsula, is aflame and shattered by siege. Twisted wrecks of tanks and Drachenjägers litter the ground between huge breaches in the defensive wall, where Pharanus' legions made its doomed last stand against an army 30 times its size, though only a small part was used to besiege the city. The rest assembles deeper inland on the peninsula high grounds. Huge, shadowy forms descend in the storm, their eldritch contours suggested by spasms of lightning. Not the gilded might of the Venusian Carthii, which we smashed, but the ash legions of Luna and Earth, the heart of Atalantia's loyalist army. Her forward legions, which took the city, now choke on their victory. A sizable portion of their force has penetrated deep into the city, pressing for the mountains, but they are cut off from the main host. Thousands clog the waterlogged lowlands that connects Tyche to the Talarian Peninsula. The spider tanks and titans that broke the walls sink in the mire. Men pile onto hovercraft and into any airship that dares take flight. They stand no chance. As I watch, the sea ripples like a single organism, and from the grey obscurity of the storm comes a wave that would make a European stop and stare. The tidal wave is a kilometer tall. It buckles the first 20 blocks of the city's oceanfront and sweeps uphill toward the mountains, to be stopped only by elevation just short of the Harper's Plaza. The greater body of the wave carries on toward the Ash Legions in the lowlands. A row of gold knights in black armor stand on the peninsula's rocky heights to watch the legions below be swallowed by the sea. 100,000 men. Gone in a moment. I should rejoice. But soon Tyche's population will follow. How many millions down there? How many millions along the coast? This will not be isolated mayhem. A chain of tidal waves will devastate northern Helios. My promise to Glerastes was broken, but not on my orders. I pull out the master switch I built in case it all went wrong. Turning it on is like killing part of myself. I never thought this moment could come. The moment where Orion failed me. She has no intention of leashing the storm. It was to be my lever. She uses it as a hammer, not to punish just gold, but the planet she hates. With seas churned to madness by the storm generators, a coastline is murdered. The wind whips around us. "This is genocide!" Alexander roars into my ear. I push him off. "Orion, what have you done? What did I let you do?" I focus a comms laser out into the gloom to form a direct line on Orion's engine, which hovers 20 kilometers offshore. She appears on my screen. She is breathing heavily. Her skin is covered in sweat. She kneels in the center of her circular sink nest from where she guided the hive mind. Of the 6 hologram blues who should surround her, only one is not dead. He shivers on his knees, blood sheeting out his nose and ears from a cerebral hemorrhage. The blast doors of the nest are sealed. She's locked out my security teams. "Orion," I say. "Orion, can you hear me? If you can hear me, stick out your right thumb." Slowly, the thumb extends. "I need to speak with you, Orion. Can you slip from the sink?" I wait. Nothing happens. Suddenly, her eyes open. Her voice is a faint whisper. The data flow was too much. Orion, we're on second horizon, going straight for three. You swore we wouldn't pass primary. What happened? Four is desired. Her eyes closed to slits. Four will teach them. Four is terraforming level. The complete annihilation of the planet's surface by storm. Her eyes are nearly closed. She can't devote attention to anything beyond the drift much longer. Orion, it is Darrow. Listen to me. You must turn off the engines. Scale back the storm. Can you do that for me? They can't win with Venus alone, so I will take Mercury. Orion, think of the army. Think of the people. There's nearly a billion here. Rats are complicit. Rational transaction. I can stop you. Her eyes flutter. I told you I could. Don't make me do it. She no longer replies to me. She is back in the sink. Without Orion's input, the storm guards will level off and avert planetary destruction. But if I sever her connection, her mind will be lost by the sudden schism. I look down at the city, back to the hologram of my friend in the visor. The storm's death will not be instantaneous. But the longer I wait, the worse it will get. I initiate the override. For a moment, nothing happens. Then Orion's body seizes and goes limp. It happens that fast. She lies there with her mouth agape, her bright blue eyes staring at nothing as they twitch in her head. Her metal finger scrapes against the floor and then goes still. I swallow a knot in my throat. For 10 years, no gold alive, not their science teams, not the creme of their astral academies, not their assassins, could kill this woman. She was a myth, and I turned her off with the flick of a switch. She was not ready for this. I felt it, but I could not believe it. Now Mercury pays. Numb and quiet inside, I turn off the hologram and use the override to reduce the storm god's output to zero. Then I am back in the storm. The sound of the wind and thunder is tremendous. More knights have run up to watch the city drown. Alexander shouts at his cousin Erlander. The two young girls point down at people flooding toward the grav loop, and the Ash Legions stomping through them to get there themselves. I try to make sense of the mayhem and ask myself how we can help those still trapped in the city. I find myself without an answer. No transport ships could fly in this. We can't carry them. We can't even stay aloft ourselves. Alexander jogs to me.
I've spoken with Erlander.
Just over 200 golds with the purple griffin stamped on their chests wait behind him, helmets down.
We request permission to enter the city to lend aid.
Permission denied.
Sir, there's nothing you can do down there. Tyke is lost. But its people needn't be, he snaps.
I turn to Alexander, furious that he would contradict me now.
They're swarming for the grav loop. Many can still escape under the mountains, but the Ash Legions in the city know it's the only way out. If they reach it, they will mow through the civilians and use it to evacuate their men right into Heliopolis. Again, the Knights of House Arcos request permission to deter them.
No.
Sir!
I turn to see Rona running up the hill in her Drachenjäger. It kneels so we can speak. She squints into the wind as her cockpit pops open. Sweat pours down her face.
What now?
I ask in exhaustion. She sees the master switch in my hands. She knows Orion is dead and doesn't flinch. So far, that makes two who know she's dead. The army can't find out. Not now. It will break them.
Boys caught an enemy scout. Full Manata by the looks of him.
One of Octavia's own? Bring him to me. I peer out over the submerged isthmus to the greater host of Atalantia's legions. Those gold knights are still on the ridge. I amplify magnification on two figures standing in the foreground. Atalantia's face peers back at me. She wears her own optics. She makes a masturbating motion and flings the load off into the wind, shaking her head at me. I retreat behind the bluff for fear of snipers. If anyone can shoot straight in this, it's her, Grey Dragoons. My Arcosian knights throw a man down at my feet. He's in Fulminata armor, all right. Here's hoping. I pull him up by the hair to find the handsome, lean face of a gold male in his 30s. Eyes that could have belonged to the purest of gold stock, and once did, before Screwface got a hold of him and gave them to Mickey, stare back at me. I pull the man into a hug, careful not to crush him with my starshell. The Arcosian knights look more than a little confused, but only Severo, my wife, Theodora, and Mickey knew the details of how we carved the man a new visage and sent him amongst our enemy as a mole nearly 3 years ago. Though I will need to know why he didn't warn us of Atalantia's ambush on Orion's fleet, I am happy to see him. I feel safer all of a sudden. Screwface, you old psycho, I say, leaning into him. Alexander stiffens at the presence of an original howler. Rona grins. She loves Screwface almost as much as she loves Freyhild, Safie's personal assassin. The name is Horatius Au Savag, you fool. As for old, Screw gives a little sniffle. I'm nigh on 35. Savvy, my good man? He cocks out a nasty smile. Figured you'd be near Turkey. If he burned cover, something bad is on its way. What's happened? Bad news, boss. Heliopolis is under assault. I feel a cold inevitability creeping upon me. What? 20 legions of the second wave made landfall. 20 crashed or had to abort. The storm has delayed those on the ground, but he'll likely send a strike force for the storm engine. More than 1 million men and tanks. Whose legions? Leopards. One at the vanguard. Ajax. I know. After Apollonius was captured on Luna, there was a vacuum in Gold Ground Command. I wondered who would rise to fill the Minotaur's place as their preeminent legate. Falth seemed poised, but Ajax has been making his bid. As violent as his mother, but twice as ambitious, he will assault the city till it falls, heedless of casualties. The man's a raging beast, with the unfortunate danger of also having a brain. Darrow, Screwface says, stepping close. What's wrong? Orion is dead. He looks stunned. For men like him, like me, who have fought this war since the beginning, there are so few who inspire us. Orion was that. We are lesser in her absence. I can't afford to mourn. With Tyche drowned and Heliopolis fallen, my army will have nowhere to retreat. We will be surrounded, bombarded, and destroyed. The moment Harnassus predicted has finally come. I must choose between saving my army and destroying theirs. I stare across the drowning city at the Ash Legion safe inland on the Talarian Peninsula. Atalantia is there, trapped by the storm. I can find a way to cross, I'm sure. If Thraxa survives, if the Morning Star made it to her, if the First Legion still exists, they will give me the power to destroy Atalantia and her entire Ash Legion, the hard Lunese core of her army. It would be the greatest victory of the war. But it will cost me Heliopolis, and in the end, my army. The Republic could recover. Gold will not. Us, for them, would be the rational transaction. Orion deemed it worth the price. Hearing the words of the Ash Lord on my friend's own lips haunts me. A rational transaction. I look at the drowning population of Tyche, who welcomed us even when Heliopolis spat on us, and yet still fell on the wrong side of one human being's moral arithmetic. And I see a spiraling spiritual darkness, ensnaring not just me, not just the friends whose cruelty I have emboldened, but Io's darkening dream. Did this all begin with betraying the sons of Ares in the Rim? With the destruction of the Ganymede dockyards? With my reign over Mercury? So many concessions in the name of necessity. So many horrors in the name of liberty. Where is the beauty I saw when Ragnar reached for Sif's hand instead of his blade as he died? Where has our humanity gone? Is this why Severo left? He felt the creep of doom and sought to cling to light. I let fear drive my hope away. I let war become me, and my men followed. Atalantia's army isn't worth mine. If I die, it should not be taking her life. It should be saving theirs. Rona, I need you. Those three words make her 10 meters taller. You can move in this bloody damn wind. Take the fastest two drakens and find the Morning Star. Find Thraxa. Tell them Tyche is lost. Heliopolis is under assault. They must cross the Ladon to relieve Heliopolis. Her mouth hangs open. You said...
I know what I said.
The Ladon has eaten three of the greatest armies the worlds have known. Is the fourth, I will feed it, my own?
How will they cross the Ladon in this?
Screwface asks.
The Morning Star will be their Stormbreaker. Captain Pellis is more than capable of the maneuver. If he's not, Char may be with them. Tell Thraxa to follow in its shadow. I'll take the armor through the mountains along the Kylor Pass and meet them at Heliopolis. Go!
Rona spares a look to Alexander. Something passes between them, and she stands to 40 meters.
Nice seeing you, kid! Screw calls after her as she thunders away.
Now this part. I take a steady breath and reluctantly turn to face Alexander. His eyes still watch Tyche in sorrow. Does your request stand? I ask. He stiffens in surprise.
Yes, sir.
There will be no rescue. The sea will come in.
Well, I haven't had a bath in weeks.
Why are you doing this? I ask, searching the strong bones of his face. They're just baked peasants.
Even peasants don't float, sir.
No amount of arrogance can hide the pain in his eyes. He blames himself for Angelia, perhaps even for this. But it also tears at him to see the suffering in the city. I feared he wanted to do this for me, to find favor in my eyes. All this time I held a mild disdain for him, because I thought my approval was all that mattered to the man. But he believes in the rising. I see it now, just as I saw this moment coming. The moment I must choose to spend his life. But he has surprised me by choosing to spend it himself. I could not be prouder of the man. He has become what Lorne should have been, and though the thought of losing him and Orion in the same hour nearly drives me to my knees, I nod.
Very well. Take your knights.
Thank you, sir. If you could do me a kindness.
His bright eyes quest after Rona. She's already disappeared inland.
Tell her to stop biting her nails. It's vile.
He pauses.
And that she was wrong about me.
On impulse, I pull out my razor, and I'm about to deliver him the peerless scar when he stops my hand.
I know what I am.
Do you?
I reach back to unclasp my wolf cloak from the ring on my left shoulder. Nearly losing it to the wind, I snap the clasps onto Alexander's mech. He falls to a knee, looking at it as if it were made all of diamonds. I lift him up.
Howlers never kneel.
For once, he has no retort. especially not when Screwface steps up to spit in his face to give him a proper welcome. The wind jams the spit back down his own mouth.
Bucket and box will have to wait, kid.
Screw shakes his hand and breaks the wind for us. Hold Atalantia as long as you can, then take the last tram and blow the tunnel behind you. Failing that, blow the tunnel and make for the mountains.
I strip off my extra batteries.
Alex pushes them back.
You must reach Heliopolis, sir.
He is right, so I keep them.
Then your armor will be spent before morning. But if you can get to the Kylor Pass, you can follow it due south and make Heliopolis in 2 weeks.
I forbid you to die, Howler. I want my cloak back.
Severo will never let me hear the end of it.
Yes, sir.
Resolution makes a thin line of his mouth.
Hail, Reaper.
I salute him and the knights behind. Hail, Arcos. He bows slightly in Screwface's direction.
An honor, sir. Big fan.
I watch from the hill with Screw as Alexander and his Martian kin depart. Beset by rain and storm, the famous knights of Elysium trot down the hill in purple and silver armor to plunge toward the drowning city. They look like the last lords and ladies of a doomed age. 203 against an army and the sea. I turn with a heavy heart and head back to my men to lead them south toward the battle in the desert that will decide the fate of us all.
Chapter 16. Lysander, Rider of the Storm. I wake in darkness to the sound of my starshell's low oxygen warning. Seraphina is dead. Her prowess in battle far outstripped mine, yet I am alive, and she is not. It feels so unfair. That should not have been the end of her story, just like Cassius's end. From a distance, death seems the end of a story, but when you are near, when you can smell the burning skin, see the entrails, you see death for what it is. A traumatic cauterization of a life thread. No purpose, no conclusion, just snip. I knew war was dreadful, but I did not expect to fear it. How can anyone not, when death is just a blind giant with scissors? This will not end well. Dido will sense a devious hand at work, because she did not see her daughter become a smear of organs. But Romulus knew. He dreaded this. He gave his life to stop this, and he failed. I do not look forward to telling Diomedes, if I even get the chance. The last thing I remember is existence breaking in two. At least that is the sound the sky made when the storm god fell to the desert floor. It was not Kalindora, or Roan, or Cicero, whose payload destroyed the engine. Bitterly contested by the garrison, my Praetorians made 3 charges against the teeth of the enemy railguns. Only on the last did I manage to dispose my final missile into the gravity engines. It was not a conscious choice to forge ahead alone. An enemy munition simply destroyed my radio transmitter, so I did not know my wingmen were dead. Hours later, I still do not know their names. I feel that is immoral. I run a diagnostic. My railgun ammunition is depleted. Little charge remains in the energy core that feeds the pulse fist, engines, and life support. The star shell is already sapping power from my pulse armor to continue to function. I will have to disconnect soon. It takes the better part of 5 minutes to free myself from the sand. When I do, I lower my canopy and gasp for air. The morning smells of petrichor and ozone. It is already 70 degrees Celsius. The sun hides behind irradiated clouds. Lightning dances in the black north. Though I am in a pocket of peace, the sandstorm still roils in the deep desert. In all directions, veils of dust shimmy across the landscape like tattered skirts. Mounds of sand shiver around me as Praetorians and Scorpions climb their way out of the sand. It is 06:30. Ajax should be here by now. Did the storm take him? What fate has befallen the invasion to the north? Is all lost to the sea? As I move to help the Praetorians, my starshell rattles in protest and freezes as hydraulic fluid pours from the pelvis. I release the inner latch and climb out. I barely recognize the war rig I rode down to the planet. Only my pulse armor is undented. I check to make sure my Bellona razor is still in its leg holster. Then I ping Serafina's tracking node. There are no results. The Ladon has taken the daughter of Romulus. A blood fly as thick as my thumb pesters my face. I barely move as it bites and drinks from my neck. I push it against my skin until it pops. More buzz nearby. Hundreds. I follow their current until they make a cloud over something on the ground, a dying horse. It is a wild sun-blood mare, the most cherished of Mercury's carved wonders. Its legs are beyond mangled, and its skin is gone. Only its orange mane remains untouched by the feasting flies. Roan kneels beside it, his starshell discarded in a dune. Freed of his own starshell, Cicero saunters over, rubbing his jaw with his pulse armor gauntlet. Oh, pity, a sunblood. Before all else, Praetorians are equestrians. Before they learn to shoot, they shovel stable stalls. Each is given a young horse to train while at the ludus. At the end of their training, they are given a gun and told to kill the horse. The mindless killers that do are bound for the Black Ops legions. Only those that prove themselves loyal to their comrades, be they beast or man, are trusted to guard the blood. Roan has likely not seen a horse in many years. "Did you know there were once 50,000 griffin on Mars?" he asks, as he strokes the mare's forehead. "Poachers sell their talons and feathers to new money on Luna. Now there are less than 500. The horse jerks as Roan's pulse knife sinks into her brain. Nothing beautiful survives the mob. The flies continue their feast as he stands. They will have found Serafina by now. Who will they find next? By the look in Roan's flinty eyes, I know I am not the only witness to the horror. "It's just a wild mare. There are thousands out here," Cicero says. "My stallion, Blood of Empire, makes that one look like a pony." I turn to him until he leaves, muttering about the loonies. I look back at the horse, seeing Serafina in its place for some reason. "Did you know her well?" "The Ra?" Roan asks. "Not as well as she deserved, I believe. She thought little of me, truth be told." Kalindora marches up. She looks at the sky. "Ajax is late. Praetorian, report." By Roan's count, our casualties were 94, 30 dead, the rest missing or injured. Of the 900 Praetorians left, only 30 starshells are still operational. Cicero's force is slightly larger, but bore more of the casualties. "Shell cannibalized the pulse armor power," Roan continues, as I walk with him amongst the Praetorians. "Over 17 hours of sustained engagement and that wind," he shakes his head. "Only 33 have juice for boot liftoff. It'll be a hike." The gray Praetorian squints south. Few features interrupt the arid plier. "We can make it." Cicero laughs from the nearby dune. He slides down it like a child to come to a sitting posture in front of us. "My good man. Loath though I am to contradict a soldier of your stature, this is my desert. Any man whose boots are dead will die here unless the shuttles come. Without cooling, your pulse armor will become an oven. How much is left in your water reserves? A third? We are kitted for heavy combat in the north, not the fucking Ladan," he sighs. "But do you really suspect something they call the Eater of Armies is to be anything less than an eater of fucking armies?" He glares at me and stands. Where the hell is that reprobate Ajax, anyhow?
Man-made thunder rumbles to the south. Ah, so he's begun without us. That muscled, walking penis. I ask Roan if the comms are still down. He nods. Orbit's no go. He gestures to a group of Praetorians atop the Storm God. But we're boosting our signal with a field array. Should be able to reach Iron Leopard Command in a few minutes. What the devil is she doing over there? Cicero squints at Kalindora. She stands on a dune to the west, looking out at the dust-veiled deep desert. Composing poetry? I use pressure suit energy to join her. I call her name as I land. She motions me to be quiet and cocks her head to the wind. Dust sprays as Cicero lands as well. Do you hear that? She asks.
No, he says. Is it the planet asking why House Loon hid the Storm God from their vaunted ally?
Shut up, Cicero.
Only because I'm thirsty.
I join her on a knee and listen. Granules of sand clink against my armor. A lizard's tiny claws crackle as he moves shadow to shadow. Thunder rumbles in the north. Wind whispers around me, whistling through the boulders, through my armor. It carries the sounds of distant machines. I bolt to my feet. Someone moves within the storm.
Those are Drachenjäger footfalls, Kalindora says.
Oh, dear, Cicero says. He backs up. Time to go.
Searching the waste around us, I don't know how we can. Dunes and the storm to north and east, flat, hard pan to the south. The eastern mountains are the closest cover, but the machines move between us and them. Except for the downed Storm God, there is no refuge for our men on foot. Nor can we bear the weight of all their armor. It would take 10 minutes to get everyone out of their suits. Far too long. We burst back to the Praetorians and land where Roan has set up his comms tower on the hull of the Storm God. There's a gargling sound as the signal connects. Ajax's voice is washed in static. His face warps in and out.
Lysander, I see you seized the moment. I had no doubt you would. Octavia would be proud, his voice mocks me.
Where's our evac? I snap. We have inbound enemy armor. Our shells are dead. Our mobility...
It doesn't seem long ago that we were last in New Sparta, does it?
Ajax, we need evac. Do you register?
I looked forward to those winters on Grandfather's estate more than anything. Believe me when I say that. You were less serious there, away from the old crone. There was no one to impress. Not until Grandfather took us hunting and left us in the bush. He told us to race back.
His eyes narrow.
You remember? Of course you do. You remember everything.
Kalindora's face falls as she understands. Cicero's face becomes a mask of utter contempt. I hold out hope that it is not what it seems.
You remember how I begged you not to leave me behind, because I sprained my ankle? Didn't really. I was just afraid of being left alone, because you were always so sure where you were going. If it was just us, you would have helped me. But you had to win, didn't you? You had to show them that you were worthy of being the heir of Selenius.
His lips curl back from his teeth.
You left me behind. It took me 3 days to find my way back, and when I did, Grandfather wouldn't even let me join the dinner table because I was unwashed. You found me crying behind the stables. You'd brought me your own food, and you sat with me. And do you remember what you said?
Ajax,
you really must learn your navigations, Ajax.
I see.
The silence between us is cold and final and mutually understood. Is this your choice, or Atalantia's?
Mine. I will mourn for you, little brother, but I will not step aside. This is my time. Give Kalindora my apologies, but she chose poorly.
He pauses, no mockery in his voice.
Should the void take you, celebrate, my brother, for before death there was glory. The link drops. I stand rooted to the spot. I thought if betrayal came, it would come from Atalantia, not Ajax. I saw the signs, but I chose to believe in a friend. What a pity for us both, for all those memories to come to this. Is this how Cassius felt? I am to die for a brotherly feud, Cicero spits. This is utterly Venusian. Roan speaks in a tight whisper. My liege, we can evacuate you south via air. And how many men could we take? I ask. Less than a third. I search the Praetorians on the ground beneath as they attempt to leech energy from downed starshells. They came for me. To save my life, I would have to abandon 600 of them. I search for some alternative and find only one. I would know the names of my wingmen on the third charge, Flavius Tivesia and Carinti Occipiter. I repeat the names as the sound of the enemy machines grows louder. What would Octavia do? I ask. Roan says nothing. She would run, Kalindora replies with a blank expression. A fine idea, Cicero says. Let's. I stare into the dust. If that is the measure of our loyalty to our men, perhaps we deserve to die. Kalindora tilts her head at me. Are you mad? Cicero's narrow eyes go wide. Roan steps forward. My liege, you are not a sovereign. Not anything, really. I grimace. But I will not live while men sworn to me die. I know the risk they took in coming here. Kalindora gives me a nod of surprised approval. Roan, prepare the Praetorians as you see fit. The enemy won't be long. This is not how Roan thought it would be, but he holds his salute for an extra second before hopping down to his men. I will not die here, Cicero says. Your boots have juice, you fool. Enough to get you to Heliopolis. Go if you must, Cicero. I abandoned the Praetorians before. I will not do so again. He comes within an inch of my face. They say a strain of madness runs through the gens' loon. Oh, how right they are. Farewell, ye infected victims of the martial disease. Cicero takes to the air without a word of apology to his men, who cannot follow. 2 dozen fly with him. More than 1,200 watch their leader go and look down at their depleted armor. I remain with Kalindora atop the storm god as the enemy machines groan and rattle within the dust. I close my eyes, seeking my mother's face. Even now in the darkness, I cannot find her. I feel so alone. Then I hear Kalindora draw her razor. Lysander. When I open my eyes, a single figure emerges from the dust less than a kilometer away. A desiccated rug flaps from his shoulder. He spots us on the storm god and thrusts his hand up into the profane crux. Only a few of his words reach us. Heart beats like a drum. The scout disappears, and a moment later the sound that has plagued my dreams from the Palatine to the belt finds me in the desert waste. The sound could only come from a legion escorting the Reaper. The howling of wolves. Kalindora goes still. He should be in the north, pinned in by Atalantia's legions, not 1,000 kilometers south, not here. How could they still have power? How could they cross so much distance when we barely made it 100 kilometers into the Hypercane's headwinds before draining our suits? Kalindora's awed voice answers the unspoken question. He rode the storm. The wait for Darrow is not long, but it is horrid. My eyes sting from the heat. It radiates up from the metal hull we perch upon. My nose fills with the fumes of machines, the dry lifelessness of the desert and smoke. The enemy emerges from the dust like a line of mechanized Mongols, a depleted legion of filthy metal Drachenjägers, carried by the winds of the storm, trudges over the crest. They are not so numerous as they sounded. I glance over at Roan. A grin spreads on his face. With the high ground and an entrenched position, we might yet survive this. Kalindora thinks otherwise. My tongue tastes the chalky roof of my mouth and feels the contours of my teeth. I tense my hand around my razor. It feels small in the pulse armor gauntlet. I raise my helm. Arroo!
Stay with the air, Kalindora says to Roan.
33 Praetorians with life yet in their starshell cores cluster tight around me atop the downed storm god's highest perch. Nearly 2,000 Scorpions and Praetorians shelter in firing lines along the rim of the broken engine below. It begins in silence, and then comes the terrific clamor of 4 wedges of Drachenjägers thundering across the desert. Their armored legs, each twice as tall as a starshell, eat up the distance. Guided anti-personnel missiles slither toward us. Interceptors race to challenge them. Depleted uranium rounds hammer through the wreckage around our position like it's cheesecloth. Praetorians fire back from prone positions all along the rim of the storm god. There are no better sharpshooters in all the legions. A Drachen teeters sideways and explodes. Another runs off at an oblique angle as its pilot is shot through the cockpit. With a heavy anti-tank rifle, Roan fires down at the plane. I scan the charging Drachenjägers. Darrow won't be in one of those rigs. He likes mobility. Where is he? I turn around to search our flanks for Darrow. As a boy, I watched him become a leader. I've studied him more than any other man. I know his trade, but that knowledge seems so useless here in the chaos of battle. There are only 4 directions, but Darrow has used so many tactics over the years. I freeze. It feels like he could come from anywhere. I spot shadows moving in the dust cloud, kicked up by the Drachenjäger's charge.
He's using them to obscure his movements, I say to Kalindora. Like at the Battle of Gibraltar, with a frontal sally, we can hit him when he swings to a flank. I concur. Prepare to charge, Kalindora tells the Praetorians.
Starshell pulse fists whine as my men shunt their remaining core power to their weapons and their boots. The heat of the desert invades my suit. On Kalindora's signal, we break from our position, bursting upward into the sky and ricocheting forward, headlong toward the shadows over the charging Drachenjägers. Then something ripples above in the sky. A Praetorian's body comes apart beside me, bisected cleanly at the waist. I lift my razor just in time. Something clangs against it, knocking me downward. The air contorts above, as men in ghost cloaks shear down through the center of my charging Praetorians. I shoot point blank at a blur and see the light bend as the railgun round goes through a man's chest. He spins downward, his wolf cloak rippling. I see the play too late to stop it. Darrow baited us with the shadows and flanked our aerial charge by sending a small group around to hit us as we forsook our position. They cleave through us. I pivot in the air to witness slaughter behind me. The world slows as I see him amidst my men, the camouflage withering away to reveal a hurricane in battered crimson pulse armor, a white razor sparking as it carves through a Praetorian starshell to sever half his neck. I burst toward the Reaper and am smashed sideways as I collide with another body, Kalindora shields me from an armored man's pulse fire. Roan mows him down. I try to rally the left wing of my men, but it is a slaughter. And at the center of it swirls a god of death. The fighter's helmet flashes. Around his body whirls that famous gold-killing blade. As violence reaches for him, Darrow does not flinch like a man. He reaches like a covetous river. He pulls violence to him, drinks it into his current, and leaps around the battlefield with a seemingly mindless capriciousness, which, when inspected, illuminates the genius of his violence. He herds us together, making sure we are tight and compact, so that our options constrict and his men's expand. It is something you can only understand when you feel dread sinking into you, when you realize you're between the claws of a trap and they're about to close. You feel surprised that it was so easy to trick you. Surprised that this is how it happens. All those years of preparing, reviewing battles, correcting others, it doesn't feel like we fell into a trap. It feels almost accidental, yet still inevitable. I feel small and stupid. "Kill the Reaper!" I shout as I plunge for him, Kalindora at my right, Roan and three others at my left. We cut through two rising knights, and then, as if smelling the murder on our minds, Darrow, without even looking, jolts backward toward us at a surprising angle. A Praetorian's head splits in half. Roan is knocked from the sky. Kalindora's left arm spins from her body. My own razor arcs forward toward Darrow's turned head and finds only air as he performs some aerial alchemy and bends, floating upward, only to shoot back down. His razor slashes at me as he flies past. I parry, but the force is incredible. I feel a blazing pain in my arm. I'm struck again as he backhands me, like a child with his blade. The razor cuts through my grav boots, and I plummet from the sky. I slam down onto the hard pan, but do not lose consciousness. I stare up in my broken armor. Metal men dance against the crackling clouds. Bodies fall like dying metal birds, leaking blood and machine fluid. The Reaper is already passing on, leaving the leftovers for his men. A starshell crashes down atop me, pinning me down. Another slams into the sand. I feel heat on my right cheek and turn just enough to see a downed shell's broken boot thruster sputtering flame against my helmet. I panic and shove in vain. Heat grows as it melts through the armor from the side. I shout and scramble, but I go nowhere as the heat intensifies and a hole opens in the right side of my helmet. My skin begins to itch. I flail, overcome with dread. The itch becomes agony. My right eyebrow curls as it burns. The epidermis begins to bubble and peel away. Fire reaches down to the dermis, shrinking it and splitting it open as fat leaks out and feeds the flames. The wolf howls fade in the distance. The flames eat my eye. Only then do I begin to scream.
Chapter 17. Darrow. Heliopolis. We brush away light resistance at the downed storm god. Without bothering to complete the kills, we head for Heliopolis. Behind us, we leave the enemy grounded or dying. Radioactive dust drifts south to dim the sun. Soon another sandstorm swallows the daylight entirely. Visibility shrinks, masking but not slowing our approach on Heliopolis. When we emerge on Ajax's rear, will it be to a conquered city? Will we be alone against 10 legions? Will our own guns be turned to be used against us? Or will the Morning Star have somehow shepherded my army through the waste? I can only hope. Just as I hope Alexander is not drowned beneath the sea.
Forward. Forward. 1 foot after the other. My Drakenjägers have barely an hour of charge left. My star shell is dead in the desert. Half the others managed to save energy by riding the Draken through the storm. All trudge on their own now. We hold on to sanity by a thread. Our water ran out in the night. Our ammunition is low. Stims power our senses and keep us from succumbing to the side effects of either the anti-rads or the radiation itself, but they have hollowed our cores. 24 hours engaged with the enemy. How many days awake does that make it for me now? 6? 7? I could not sleep in the passage, despite my perch on the Drakenjäger. The night was hell, and howling wind and avalanches so frequent we had to abandon the pass and risk the desert. Blackness was our master. Static and sand and gargling radiometers narrated our endless nightmare. Orion's storm no longer escalates, but it has run wild without her focusing its wrath. 2 sandstorms swallowed a third of our number. The rest, including myself, face cellular decay from fallout. I puke again into my cockpit. The catch is full. The vomit laced with blood. It leaks down into the cracks that trickle over my armored legs. My head pounds, eyeballs aching at their roots. My symptoms are minor compared with the greys, blues, and our remaining obsidians. Some have already succumbed to delirium as their DNA unwinds. Only the reds and golds hold strong. I just want rest. I just want water. And to sleep. Forward. 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 The morning is the color of bronze when we come upon the graveyard of tyrants. Parnassus dumped the monoliths the golds built to honor 7 centuries of sovereigns in the desert. The giant statues lie on their backs as sand swirls around them. A skirmish was fought amidst them. Waves of sand lap at the half-submerged and smoldering carcasses of war machines. The debris field thickens. Phantoms move through the dust. Lone infantrymen without clothes and covered in blood walk past us. We cannot tell their tribe. Blackened husks sit cross-legged in the sand. A desert hyenadile gnaws at a dead man, looks at us, fans the threat wings on its neck, and flees as an artillery shell detonates nearby. War machines scream and groan in the distance. Their shadows flit through the gloom, growing more substantial with every step. It is like emerging from one dream into another. I draw what remains of my force up on a hill with a view of the storm wall of Heliopolis. Our flanks secured by a sheer mountain facade, I survey the siege with Screwface. My heart sinks. Heliopolis has fallen. With the desert storm guard down, the storm has lost its direction. It sweeps eastward. Ajax's army fights in the sunshine. Acrid smoke rises from huge gashes in the storm wall. Iron Leopard and Fulminata shock troops claw through gaps 300 meters from the ground. Tanks roll into canyons bored through the durasteel by particle cannons. A firefight rages on the ramparts of the wall, where a thin gap exists between the wall and the shield. Her great guns are silent. Parnassus may already be dead. If they take the city, if they take down her shield generators, the Ashmada can reinforce them and lower torch ships and Anihilo herself across the south. My army will come out of the desert after surviving the storm and be met with oblivion. Screwface understands. I'll scout forward and see where we should hit. He jumps off the ledge to cross the boulder field below in small bursts. I turn back to my men. They can hear the battle, if not see it. Less than a third of the force that set out for Tyche joins me on the hill. Many lie dead in the plain of Caduceus, or were swept away by water or wind on our path to Tyche. Alexander is gone. Rona and Colloway sent into the storm. It has been nearly 24 hours since I've seen Thraxa. Only Felix is left amongst my gold howlers. I feel the despair.
Where is the Morning Star?
A green pilot asks. His hair has already started to fall out. His mech is smoothed by sands like a river stone. Does his gun even work?
It is on its way, I say. We must buy Harnassus time. One last charge of metal. I will...
The green's head disappears. Screaming munitions slam into my men from above with pinpoint accuracy. A depleted uranium round gouges a hole through my armor and punches through the meat of my right hamstring. I go down hard. Spitting dust from my mouth, I watch as shrouded figures in billowing desert cloaks fall from a cliff hundreds of meters above. Bursts of air come from their skip boots, cushioning them as they land on my Drachenjäger's open cockpits to drive razors through the top of my pilot's skulls, or land behind them to scalp off their faces or claim their heads. I can't tell if Felix goes down. In less than 10 seconds, I am the only one alive, except for a pilot they pull from his cockpit to vivisect on the shoulder of his own mech. Rough hands cut me from my starshell and drag me out. Men with masks of child's faces tear off my grav boots. The pilot screams above me. A boot stands on my throat as the man in the pale mask treads the sand to squat in front of me. They pour engine solvent on my face to clean off the blood. A hunched obsidian with giant sun